You just think we just, you know, whatever happens, we just shit another player. And everything's going to be perfect. All of our fans think that. You all think that. That's what you write about.
Unacceptable in all areas. Unacceptable coaching, unacceptable playing, unacceptable effort. Not what we're about.
You don't want to be here. There's a specific reason. Not really, you know, I think we did a poor job recruiting. If guys are coming in and immediately walking out the door because it was something different than what they thought it would be. We lied to them during recruiting, or we sold them on a dream that wasn't true.
Certainly, like I said, coached our kids to do the right thing and you know, play with poise, play with confidence, play with dignity, play with class. At the same time, we're not going to take anyone's shit either.
We want to be a big, fast, dominating, aggressive, relentless football team that nobody in the SEC wants to play.
Now, that's also a second in the West, baby.
Yes, sir.
We're ever getting excited about second. From now on, it's first, okay?
All I want to do is fucking eat. I want you to eat. I want you to eat. I want you to want this shit. Do you want it? Do you want it? Show me.
Bunch of them did it again.
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Hey, Shane, not a whole lot. Still recovering from the weekend we had in that last podcast. That was a long one. But before we get into, you know, we got some Week 9 kickoffs to get into. We got some previews to get into as well. You know, something we hit on, Will Muschamp, 2-0 with his damn glasses. Coach Muschamp. Coach Muschamp was on SEC Network Monday night, Shane, talking about the glasses, how they don't make him soft.
Hey, first of all, tell me about these damn glasses. Are you getting soft?
Because
I know when we were at LSU, if I would have walked in with some damn glasses on, you'd have said I was getting soft.
No, I'm not getting soft. I'm getting old. That's the problem I've got right now.
Well, the thing is, it gets kind of one and the same, though, Coach. As you get a little older, you get a little softer, too, right?
No. I'm hard as ever. I can tell you that right now.
All right, Shane, I just thought this was great because he does look, he looks more like a grandpa with these glasses. He looks not quite a hard ass as he normally does, but I think this is his way of letting the listeners know he's still just hard as ever.
He's still hard, man. He's still hard. Don't you count Muschamp out. Don't you call him soft because, dude, you know, it's little things like this. You know, we talk about some of these coaches. Like that Muschamp, you know, you see him interact when he's in a good mood. He seems like one of the cooler guys to hang out with, you know. And I've always thought Muschamp is just a hard ass, but he seems like he is, you know, he's always cutting up. And then even like that video with Kirby and him on the, or a picture of him and Kirby on the sideline, you know, everybody was listening to what Muschamp had to say. So he just seems like one of those guys that probably maybe underestimated him. Maybe he is one of those guys I'd like to hang out with.
Yeah, maybe on another pod, particularly off-season shit, we rank the coaches by who we'd want to have a beer with, and Will Muschamp, he's shooting up my list.
Absolutely, man. Little things like it. Life's better in South Carolina when they're winning, ain't it? You know?
All right, Shane, so we're obviously still looking ahead to Week 8. That's the week we're in. But on every Monday, the SEC announces the Week 9 kickoffs. So these are for the October 26 games. It's crazy how fast the season comes out. We just like to run these down real quick. Kickoff times, TV coverages, and we'll just go in order of the kickoffs. Mississippi State, Shane, at Texas A&M. The only noon kickoff for Week 9 on SEC Network, 11 o'clock Central. And then here we go. We got a big CBS game. This is going to be a great one, Shane. Auburn at LSU, 3:30 Eastern, 2:30 Central. That's going to be a showdown to decide. You know, it's probably going to eliminate Auburn if they lose it. It may eliminate LSU from SEC West if they lose this one. And then, you know, in a couple weeks they'll play Alabama. So that's huge. Boys here, South Carolina at Tennessee, Shane, 4 o'clock Eastern. SEC Network, that's going to be a battle there. Arkansas at Alabama, it's going to be a night game, 7 o'clock Eastern on ESPN. And then last game here, Missouri at Kentucky, 7:30 Eastern time on SEC Network, Week 9. All SEC games, we've got some good matchups here.
Yeah, what was the Alabama Arkansas one? What time was that?
7 o'clock Eastern time.
I think I would have switched one of these. You know, yeah. I think that Texas A&M Mississippi State game could be awesome, and maybe it being the only thing on at noon's not a bad deal. You know, everybody could watch that, but. You know, the South Carolina, Tennessee, I thought maybe one of those would have got flexed, South Carolina at night, you know. That would have been crazy. So, but, you know, beggars can't be choosers. I'll take it. It's not like I have any input anyway, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, everybody always wants the night game. This week it's going to be Alabama and Kentucky, but just about all these matchups I'm looking forward to. It's going to be a really good weekend.
This will be good. So how many times has LSU done the 3:30 game?
I think this will be their first time, Shane.
Oh, first time. Okay.
Well, actually, they're doing it. They're going to be doing it this weekend against Mississippi State. So they'll have two in a row. But yeah, that's you know, the LSU, they love to have those night games in Death Valley. We just saw why there against Florida, but they can't get them all at night, unfortunately. But it's just too much of a damn home field advantage, I guess.
Yeah, you're probably right. So, no, I like it, man. I always like looking forward. I'm glad we're still in the season. Right around the corner, man, these games are going to start dwindling down. Then we're talking bowl games and shit like that. So, soak it up, guys, because you're in the middle of it right now. Mm-hmm. You're on the heel. So, enjoy the football because, unfortunately, it doesn't last all year.
All right, Shane, you ready to go around the league?
Heck yeah, buddy. Let's do it.
Now let's go around the league.
My daughters said something about me wearing a visor and need to put on a hat because I'm getting bald. So I'm going to wear a hat from here on out.
I mean, if you look over the next 6 years, I think we played Miami 3 times, Florida State 6 times, South Florida 3 times, Mississippi State 1. So who's the SEC teams? You know, I mean, I think it's an injustice for the kids. We should mix those games up, and you should, play more teams from the West.
Why don't you start calling around and see if you can get somebody else to play us, and we'll play them. We'll play anybody you can get to play us.
In Louisiana, hold on a second.
Hey, guys! Hey! I'm having a press conference, okay? Thank you!
All right, Shane, so we're going to get to Auburn, Arkansas more in-depth on the next episode. We're still waiting for Gus Malzahn to have his first media availability of the week. But I wanted to hit on the Razorbacks here quickly because, man, Shane, we already talking about, we basically fired Chad Morris on the last podcast. I'm standing by that until further notice. But something I don't think we hit on, their top commit, decommitted 12 minutes after that Kentucky game. So that's the dumpster fire going. And now it gets even worse, Shane, because their highest ranked defensive signee, who guy's already on campus, Devin Bush, defensive back, announced here on Monday he's leaving, or he says he's going to the NCAA transfer portal, which probably that certainly means he is leaving. This is a 4-star out of New Orleans. And, man, it's just not a good time for Chad Morris and company. And on top of that, Shane, check out this stat. This comes courtesy The Solid Verbal. That's an outstanding college football podcast. They noted this. After 7 weeks into the season, Shane, there's 4 major college football teams that have not played a team with a winning record. And it's funny because Clemson's on the list. We all like to make fun of Clemson's soft schedule. But the other 3, NC State, Utah, and then the biggest shocker to me, Shane, Arkansas. So Arkansas having this terrible record. They've yet to face a team with a winning record. And then look at the rest of the schedule, Shane. Auburn 5-1, Alabama 6-0, Mississippi State 3-3, Western Kentucky, the game we look at on Arkansas schedule is a layup. They're 4-2. Then they go LSU 6-0, Missouri 5-1. I mean, I'm not trying to pile on Arkansas and Chad Morris, but my God, Shane, it looks like now they're getting into the good part of their schedule. It's like a murderer's row here.
Dude, that's – I mean, what do you do? What do you do from here? You know, Mike, I think you got to be creative. I honestly think Coach Morse has that capability of being creative, making this team exciting to watch. I don't know. I just don't know. They got to do something. Let some of this young – have we – all right, this is bold, Mike, but have we thought about another quarterback change? But instead, not Hicks, not Starkle, but bring in the true freshman. Do you think it's time? I mean, just mix it up a little bit.
I mean, give him a spark, give him something, give him – maybe that's the missing ingredient to this offense is just a dual-threat running, you know, capability under center. That would certainly help. I mean, they got nothing else to lose at this rate.
Seriously, if you do this, you bring him out there, he's going to have growing pains, of course, but, you know, none of these guys are the future. They've had their opportunities. They're not the future. But you bring Jefferson in, and then, you know, you see him connect with Trey Knox for a touchdown or something like that, man. I mean, you may not win these games, but at least gives you a little bit of hope for the future. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. You know, Shane, when you talked about mixing it up, you know where I honestly thought you were going to go with that?
What's that?
I thought you were going to say, take them jerseys off. We're playing in sweats this week.
Going back to our roots, man. They got to do something. I hate to see it because they had an opportunity, man, to grab the bull by the horns. And it was, honestly, it was against Texas A&M. If they could have won that game, they came up, if they would, I think that momentum would have carried over to this Kentucky game. Mm-hmm. We'd be singing a totally different narrative right now, but they didn't. They missed the opportunity, so everybody's ready to bury Morse, and I'm one of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's not spend too much time on the Razorbacks right now, Shane. We'll get to more of them tomorrow. But let's jump on down to Tuscaloosa.
Roll Tide!
Nick Saban met with the media here on Monday, Shane, and, you know, it was pretty interesting. I don't think he was really taking a jab at Kirby, particularly since that's his former assistant and everything, and they're very close. But he did note in his presser, talking about Tennessee, you know, we cannot overlook anyone. And he said, just look what happened to Georgia. It's like, and it's funny because he's played South Carolina. You know he would never say anything bad about South Carolina before playing them, but now that he's faced them, I mean, that was a close game there for a minute, if not for a couple of questionable calls that could have went the other way. But
next week, Georgia State, look at Georgia State, you know?
Exactly. So he holds that in until after he faces these teams. I just thought that was kind of funny. This is something I actually missed from their A&M game. I guess it was at the very end there, Shane. Devonta Smith, one of their outstanding receivers, he got tossed from the game against the Aggies late in the contest for throwing a punch against Leon O'Neal, the defensive back there for A&M. And going back and watching the tape, Leon O'Neal also punched him, but he was not ejected. It was just Devonta Smith. You know, they usually catch the guy that does it second sometimes.
That's right.
Which is unfortunate. But Nick Saban announced on Monday that Devonta Smith will be suspended for the first half of the Tennessee game. Upset special?
Well, I think our best linebacker is missing the first half too. So that's not good. You know, Toto, I can never say his name, but, you know, he got hit for targeting, so
right.
He's going to miss the first half of this game. Something about these punches and stuff, you know, you watch them, and one guy gets kicked out, the other one doesn't, you know, there's 15-yard penalty, and there's these punishments, but if you're watching that game, the commentary, they were just, like, cutting up, like, yeah, you can't be the second guy, you know, just like... They're just making a mockery of the situation, and I think both teams, like, if you got punches thrown, you kind of saw this 2 weeks ago with Georgia, you know, there were some punches thrown. I think when you review this, I think that's when you should address it and punish, you know. You're not just during the game can say, okay, well, this guy, obviously, yeah, you caught it in the moment, but do you think there's any type of replay ever going to happen where they can – pull the tape and say, okay, look, they both punched?
I mean, possibly, but I don't know if they look at, like, not that it matters what they say or anything, but I don't know. I think you're just missing some context when you do that. I don't know about you, Shane, but I've always thought that punching someone on a football field, particularly in the head, is so stupid because you're just hitting a guy either in the face mask or a helmet. You're going to do more damage to your hand than you are them. They're not even going to care, you know? So, yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it, but I just don't know if they can go back and do that because I think a lot of times maybe a punch looks like a slap or you know what I mean? So I think you just have to kind of be there and see it in real time, and it needs to be decided then, and they're just not going to catch it all in real time.
That's a good point. Well, we've got enough replays going on. I don't know what I was thinking there. Just regard that. That was dumb.
Well, Shane, it is the third Saturday in October after all, and yes, this used to once be a great rivalry. Now it's just typically just a speed bump on the way to Alabama's latest SEC championship, national championship, college football playoff appearance.
I got my cigar ready, Mike.
But for Nick Saban, yeah, I just thought this was great, Shane. I mean, he understands, you know, he's got a good, very good grasp of his fan base and how cherished this rivalry still is to a lot of people in that state on both sides, really. So I think it means that much more to Nick Saban. So let's jump over to Nick Saban talking about this rivalry and that I thought this was great. Old man Saban just telling the kids how it used to be back in his day when they had three channels and one game on a week. I just thought that was a classic clip. And then finally, you know, he hit on the fact that Jimbo used to play on his basketball team. He respects Pruitt as a coach, but not as a basketball player, apparently.
Tennessee is always a game that's a big rivalry game. It means a lot to a lot of people in Alabama. Certainly means a lot to us. It means a lot to me. You know, Jeremy has done a really, really good job there. His team, to me, is emerging. You know, they lost two games that they very easily could have won. But they're playing with great discipline, toughness. The players are really playing hard. They're executing well in terms of what they did and probably played, you know, their best game this last week against Mississippi State. So, you know, I think all you have to do is look at the, you know, South Carolina-Georgia game and sort of figure out that anybody, if you don't play well every week, if you play poorly and the other team plays well against you, and you turn over and make mistakes, you know, anybody can beat anybody. So,
did you, as a follow-up, did you have a favorite college football rivalry game growing up?
Well, you know, when I grew up, there wasn't 26 games a week on TV. There was one game on TV. And, you know, I had to go turn the antenna for my dad so he could watch the game because we only got three channels. So you had to get it on the right channel, and the antenna had to be pointed in the right direction. So, you know, there's a lot of great rivalry games. You know, I remember watching Alabama and Auburn. You know, when I was a kid, Ohio State and Michigan, Nebraska and Oklahoma used to have some big rivalry games. You know, Southern Cal, UCLA. I mean, I could go on and on and on of, you know, some of the historic rivalry games that you were just hopeful when I was growing up that you would have a chance to see them and they would be on TV. So I can't say that I had a favorite. I grew up in West Virginia, so back in those days, the Pitt-West Virginia game was a big game. I guess as a kid, because I was in West Virginia and that was the one that affected me the most, that was probably what I would say only because of the exposure that I had to it.
Were you ever in a noontime basketball league with Jeremy Pruitt?
You know, he never played much, so I can't really comment. I know he's a great competitor and did an outstanding job for us here, and one of the best coaches that we've ever had on our staff in terms of, you know, knowledge, experience, work ethic, players responding in a positive way to him, good teacher on the field, and that's certainly reflected in the way their team is playing.
All right, Shane. So old man Saban, he only had three channels back in the day. He's kind of showing his age there. I just thought that was great. But, yeah, I mean, we'll get to Pruitt here, but it's clear that people in Alabama, people in Tennessee, this rivalry, while it may not be competitive on the field at the moment, I mean, it still means a great deal to college football fans and obviously these two fan bases.
Absolutely, man. I remember growing up, this being a big game, my parents making a big deal of it. They had coworkers that maybe were from Alabama or Alabama fans. You know, this is deeper than the last. I mean, you look at the last 11 years and you say, oh, yeah, this is Alabama. Alabama owns it. They're going to be on top forever. But, 2006 to 1995, Alabama was only able to win twice, And the one thing about this series, it always feels like it's not back and forth. It's like who owns the decade. So this game is deep because there's a lot of fans in there that have seen the Alabama highs and the Alabama lows, just like the Tennessee. And in my gut, I know that there's going to be a day. There is going to be a day that it will turn around. Now, will it be this year? I don't know. I hope so. Like I said, I got a cigar ready. I truly got a cigar ready if we ever beat Alabama. But I've been holding on to that cigar for a while, Mike. And I thought Saban done retired by now. But, that cigar is getting a little stale. But I'm still going to smoke the hell out of it if we ever beat them.
I got you, Shane. Well, let's jump on down to the other side of this one. Go on down to Knoxville. Jeremy Pruitt met with the media here on Monday. And, apparently there's some kind of controversy. Seems like, kind of like you always like to hit on, seems like a lot of these local media people on Rocky Top like to make a story out of nothing. And the latest thing is apparently, why didn't they get Brian Maurer off the field sooner if he had a concussion? I'm not sure what you can do, kind of like Pruitt said here. And as soon as they noticed something, they yanked him from the game. And based on the way they called the game with Garantano out there, they clearly feel much more comfortable with Brian Maurer. So it's not like they were just looking out for themselves. I mean, I think if they didn't care about Brian Maurer, I think they would have just left him in the damn game. That's kind of my read on it. But what are your thoughts on all that, and if this is really that big of a deal? I mean, obviously, concussion is a serious issue, and they addressed it. They took him out of the game as soon as they realized it, and he didn't return. And Pruitt says it looks like Maurer's going to be good. He's already practicing a little bit, but not cleared for this Alabama game. And I don't think he's going to be until several days. It takes a while to go through the concussion protocol.
Well, when Brian failed, when he hit his head, man, it looked bad. But he did pop right back up. In fact, I was worried when it happened. I was like, oh, damn, here we lost our quarterback again, because this last week he got hit pretty hard against Georgia. But I'm watching it, and he did bounce right back up. He got right back in the huddle. So, I mean, he's right. You can't pause this game. And it's kind of – honestly, the comments when he came out with this, when I was talking about, doing the instant replay for the punching, I thought about what he was saying here. I was like, you know what? You can't. This is a physical game. There's so much hitting, so much activity going on during. You cannot stop momentum. And the fact that he came up, you got spotters on the sideline, medical staff that are always keeping an eye on these games. And if they felt like he, something was wrong, they would have got to coach and stopped it. But the fact that he popped right back up and got back in the huddle, you can't do that. You can't assume. And then when they got to talk to him, a couple plays later, then obviously they realized that, we're going to shut him down,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, like I said, I think this is kind of much ado about nothing. I don't really understand why this is getting blown out of proportion, but
it's Tennessee media, Mike. That's what we do. We take a small little story and we're just trying to run with it. Like has he gotten to the point that he doesn't care about his players' well-being? I mean, come on, man. Anybody watching that game knew he got hurt. Knew that hurt, not that he got hurt. Knew that that obviously did not look good. He fell directly on his head. But the fact of the matter is he popped back up, and all of us were relieved, and then the media's like, well, we got us a little story here, So, I mean, get out of here with that garbage.
It's almost like they won a game. Now, how can we spin this into a negative?
How can we bring negativity back in the locker room? This is so dumb. So, no story here, and I like how he addressed it.
Now, kicking it over to Pruitt, Shane, let's jump to his comments. obviously an Alabama guy, but he's played a little bit there at Middle Tennessee before transferring back to Alabama. He's coached both sides of this thing. Now he's played in the game. So what this rivalry means between Tennessee and Alabama to Coach Pruitt is kind of cool, I thought. And then finally, we have joked about this, and now Pruitt's joking about it, breaking out. I believe the high school is Shiloh Christian. I apologize if that's not right, but there is a high school in Arkansas, Shane, that always goes for it. They never punt. They never kick. They always do onside kicks. They just, they're like Mike Leach on steroids. And Pruitt was asked about his game plan this week, and he brought that up. I just thought we got to add this one.
Hey, Coach, they're all important, no question about it. But this particular team against this program that you spent some time with, does it have any extra special meaning for you at all?
Well, if you know anything about this rivalry, which I do, anybody that's been associated with this rivalry over the their lifetime, right? It's a pretty special event, if you want to call it, or ball game, or whatever you want to call it. To me, it's an event, right? You know, the third Saturday in October, the third week of October. So whether you're on the Tennessee side, the Alabama side, you know, kind of all the old heads, so to speak, this is the rivalry, right? So this is the game. So, yeah, I grew up watching it, had an opportunity to play in it. I've had an opportunity to coach in it, now on both sides. So this week does have a gets you a little bit kind of going right there, I guess. You know, I was thinking about, you know, there's a high school team over in Arkansas. You know, they always onside kick, okay? They never punt, you know, because I don't know. I've never seen them play. I always hear people talk about it, you know. In fact, they played one of the high school teams here in our state this year. Somebody was talking about it. So, you know, we've really kind of considered that as our game plan. Just don't give them the ball, you know, if we can do that. So, you know, I don't know. As far as the other part, you know, we'll play Batuli and we'll play Q. We'll play JJ, Solon, Aaron Beasley, who gives us the best opportunity to have success.
All right, Shane. So clearly Pruitt was joking here, and I'm not really. I mean, I think I've brought this up before. When you play a team like Alabama, particularly when you're on the road, I mean, Tennessee is a 35.5-point underdog. No one's expecting them to even, you know, compete with this team. I'm not saying they go full-on crazy here and just, you know, go for every fourth down and onside it every time, but I think I would be, I mean, I'm not even exaggerating. I would almost go for every fourth down once you cross the 50. I think, yeah. I don't think you kick field goals. And especially if you're in the red zone, I would go for it every time because 3 points is just not going to cut it. And I would even pull out some tricks. You know, I'd do some fake, you know, some onside kicks, some fake punts, stuff like that, because you have to steal possessions when you're going up a team like this and you're so outmanned. Thoughts on all that?
Agree and disagree. I don't think. I mean, Alabama's a great team, and it's going to take everything Tennessee has to win this game. But I don't think we're going to have to go to the extremes of onside kicking every time, or onside kicking at all. Hopefully it doesn't come down to that. You know, this is something that, you know, Alabama has shown some cracks, man. It blows my mind that Texas A&M wasn't able to run the ball more, but that's something that they really have struggled against. Mm-hmm. And this is a team that you can keep on the field longer than you could in the past. I think that's how you beat Bama. You know, you keep that defense on the field as long as you can. But that does require going for it on fourth downs at times, you know. But if it's 3-4 yards, you know, at a pop, then that's what you got to do. What you can't afford to do is just let Tua out there all the time, you know. So if you're going 3 and out, yeah, it's easy to get behind. Then it becomes a shootout. You got to stay ahead of this thing. You've got to stay on top of it from the beginning. I even the kicking, the field goal kick, I think if it's a close game, field goal kicks are fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to resort to onside kicks and things like that. I mean, we've got talent on Tennessee, and I honestly, I think this defense of Alabama is young and can make mistakes. So I think that's what you take advantage of.
Now, let me ask you this, because early on in that Mississippi State game, it looked like the only way Tennessee was really getting pressure, because they struggle. They do have Darrell Taylor, who's a good pass rusher, but, I mean, outside of him, that's about it. So they were having to blitz a lot of corners, a lot of safeties to, you know, disrupt the Mississippi State offense, and that worked. That's probably going to be something similar against Alabama. Do you sit back and, you know, play a lot of guys in your secondary and force Tua to dink and dunk? Or do you come after him knowing that if you don't get there, you know, you're probably going to have not only a one-on-one, but a one-on-one in which you're vastly overmatched? How do you handle that? Do you come after Tua if you're Tennessee?
I think you do. And even though we weren't the only ones that watched this game, Mike, so did Saban, you know. So he knows that we are going to try to create ways to get pressure on Tua. So I fully expect a lot of wide receiver screens, that sort of thing, to get their playmakers the ball. But if you do that and you're up pressed, I think that's the best shot you got about, you know, I mean, because the name of the game here is to try to get Alabama to go three and out, and then you're back to your drive. So I think that you do that by putting pressure, that you put you don't give the wide receivers a lot of room on the outside to make those. Let them, if you have a one-on-one and they've got to go with a streak or something like that to get the ball down the field, then that's fine. Just don't let these guys have the space, because when these guys have space, they're, as you know, like Coach said last week, they're erasers, man. They mm-hmm. just erase those yards, and that's what we can't afford to do because we don't have the speed to keep up with them.
All right, Shane, let's jump on down to Baton Rouge.
Go Tigers.
Where Coach O met with the media here on Monday, coming off that big win against Florida. And now I think the biggest challenge for LSU, you know, everyone's going to be picking the Tigers. Mississippi State's coming off two back-to-back tough losses. And we all know LSU's riding high. If there's a college football playoff rankings this week, I think LSU would be ranked number one. I mean, that's just my opinion, but I think they'd clearly be in that top four discussion. So he's got to get Coach O, that is, they've got to get his Tigers up to the task of going into a place of Starkville where they may be overlooking them.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, Shane, last time, I know these are different teams, clearly, but when LSU went to Mississippi State last year, and they, like Coach O will get into here, they ran into a damn buzzsaw. They lost 37-7. It was the biggest or most lopsided result in history of this series that Mississippi State won the game. Never won by larger than 30 points. So Coach O knows what a dangerous place this Starkville can be. Thoughts on LSU. That's one of the beautiful things about college football. Sometimes it's hard for these kids to get up two games in a row. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge for LSU this week. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I totally agree. I mean, we've seen it this year with LSU. I mean, after that Texas game, mm-hmm. if you remember at Northwestern State, there was a time this thing was 17-14 with 5 minutes left to go in the second quarter. You know, LSU finally put on the steam and got the victory. And you look at a box score and you say, oh, 65-14, they killed him. But there was a brief moment where LSU just was not in the game, and Northwestern State was able to take advantage of. Mississippi State is a dangerous team. You've seen it with their takeaways. And if it got lopsided, if Mississippi State got up and then, you know, Joe creates a couple of mistakes, you saw it with South Carolina and Georgia, and throws, you know, four interceptions or something like that, then all of a sudden we're singing a different tune at the end of the game.
Yeah, I think so, Shane. And, you know, the biggest thing, Kylin Hill didn't get going there against Tennessee. I think that's he's just such a central part of this offense. I think that's what really killed him. So the focus this week for Mississippi State's got to be getting Kylin Hill going. And LSU, you know, they've been pretty solid here the last couple weeks stopping the run, but they have been susceptible to be getting hit by some of these guys. So that's going to be something to see. And also, for whatever reason, under Joe Moorhead, Mississippi State plays a lot better at home than they do away. So I expect this to be a much different Mississippi State team than we saw the last 2 weeks. And this is also their only home game in a five-game stretch. It's really weird. They had two road, get the home, then two back on the road. So, I mean, they're going to have to throw the kitchen sink in this one. And I think this is going to be a lot closer than people are expecting. And I think Coach O is right there with me. So let's jump to his comments on the challenge of getting his team up for another SEC game after that huge monumental Saturday night showdown, on how tough it can be with them cowbells in Starkville, Shane. And then finally, I thought this was a pretty cool little note here talking about coaching under Pete Carroll and how what he learned on how to keep his team motivated as they find more and more success, which is something that LSU, this is going to be kind of new for him.
Coaches adapt that kind of thing. Well, you know, here's what's got to happen is that they're 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old young men. Obviously, they've been away from us since Saturday night, so we're going to have to get them refocused today on the task at hand, but we do want to celebrate our win. That's why we don't start the 24-hour rule until today. And then we're going to celebrate our win. We're going to show them the good plays. We're going to show them the good things we did, the things we must improve. Then after we watch the film today, we have a 24-hour rule. We throw it in the garbage can, and on the Mississippi State, we stay focused that way.
Coach, obviously the crowd noise worked in you guys' favor this game, but you're going up against Mississippi State with those cowbells. Yeah. It's going to be a really intense environment, just talking about your guys playing that.
Yeah, here's what I will remind them. I will remind them that we walked into a hornet's nest 2 years ago, and I didn't have them ready. That was one of the loudest stadiums we had played in all year. And not only the cowbells, but the music, the fans were into it, and obviously they played lights out. What happens with Mississippi State, they're going to pick one game a year that there's a target on, and it's always seemed to be LSU, and they're going to play their best game. So we're going to expect their best football game. We're going to play crowd noise, but I'm going to have them better prepared this year. Not only the cowbells, but the music, the fans is very loud in that stadium. Thanks for bringing up that point.
Yeah, Ed, over the years, you've taken a lot of stuff from Pete Carroll, being on his staff. Mm-hmm. What did you take from Pete about as your team gain more notoriety and being number one, number two, and I guess trying to focus but keep loose at the same time. What did you take from Pete and how to handle that?
Block out the noise. Pete was phenomenal at blocking out the noise and really focusing on the task at hand, getting the team better, look at what's real, look at the tape and what's real, and I can hear him say it right now, Eddie, that five technique got to get better. Even in a game where we may have 8 to 10 sacks, he would always point something out that we got to get better and be constructive and get better and better. Pete's teams got better as the season went on. That's what I want our team to do, get better and better and better. Really, the only ranking that counts is when you get in the college football playoff. Until then, none of them count as far as it's good right now, but it doesn't mean anything. You got to win. Got to win consistently throughout the season.
All right, Shane. So Coach O got his eye on the big prize. He knows, you know, this is the SEC. We keep hitting the same notes here, but just like Georgia, I mean, I think they overlooked South Carolina a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Got to give South Carolina all the credit in the world, particularly that defense for coming up big. But if Mississippi State, you know, if they play like they did the last couple weeks, yeah, they're going to get killed here. But if they come together and play like they were early in the season, remember, this team beat the hell out of Kentucky. If they have that type of performance, if the bearded traitor, who now Joe Moorhead says bearded traitor will start moving forward, if he catches fire at home, LSU is going to have trouble with this team.
Yeah, no quarterback controversy going into this week, Mike. This team, it's settled. We know what they are. We know what they're about. But they do need to get back to their roots, man, and that's running the ball and playing strong, aggressive defense. And it's tough. This is LSU, man. If you didn't watch this damn game, you missed a show, because LSU's offense is amazing. But they can, things happen. You know, it's college football any given Saturday. And, you know, if Mississippi State comes out there and gets up, I mean, these guys can make you pay. They lead the nation, or they're pretty close in the nation in turnovers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an unappreciated stat, but you see – I go back to Georgia and South Carolina. Four turnovers, and we're talking about South Carolina upsetting Georgia. Same thing can happen to LSU. Not saying that it will, but what better place than at home with the cowbells ringing?
Yeah, and I'm not saying this is going to happen particularly this week or at all, but, you know, Joe Burrow has been so flawless this season. Can LSU survive a game, Shane, where he just, you know, it may come. There may come a time where he's off. And how will this offense that, they got the running game going against Florida, but that's not always been there either. So, you know, imagine a game where Joe Burrow throws two picks and he's, you know, completing 50% of his passes.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I'm not saying they can't survive it, but it's going to get pretty hairy, particularly if that defense doesn't step up. You know what?
Yeah, absolutely, man.
All right, so let's jump to the other side of this. Let's jump on down to Starkville, where Joe Moorhead, I mean, man, he had a lot to say here, Shane. I found two clips. There was one of him screaming, and there was one of him whispering. The screaming, I could not really make out what he was saying. It was making my ears bleed, so we went with the whispering. So hopefully these clips, we're not going to use a ton of his clips because they were just a little too low, but... he seemed, I don't want to say demoralized, Shane, but he just talked about the fact that, you know, he put so much into Mississippi State and trying to make him a winner outside of his family life. It's nothing but Mississippi State football. And he was telling the story about his daughter was down on the game, came to Neyland Stadium. She's crying after the game. He's trying to console her. They're walking off the field. And all these fans telling him he sucks. And he says, they were right, I sucked that Saturday. But you feel kind of bad for Coach Moorhead when you hear something like that. But, you know, sometimes these coaches, Shane, they're so damn competitive. And it's not like Joe Moorhead just fell ass backward into this position. He knows what he's doing. It may not have looked like it on Saturday, but there may be an extra fire lit under his ass this week to just kind of come out here and show that, this is his damn job, and he's earned it.
I bumped into another Mississippi State guy today. Yeah, old timer. And I was just, I said, did you come up here for the game? And I was just kind of joking. And he goes, yeah, actually we did. And I was like, oh man. I was like, well, sorry about that. You know, I said, you play tough, you know? And he goes, yeah. He goes, honestly, we're lucky we didn't lose by more, but I was talking to him about Joe, and he's like, you know, I really like Joe. I was like, because I was curious, you know. I was like, because this guy, I mean, he says he's owned season tickets since the 60s. Like, his dad had season tickets, and they just kind of, if you ever want to find me, look on the 40-yard line behind the players. I'm two rows up. And he goes, and I'll be there every game. And I said, that's awesome, man. I said, do you go to all the teams? You know, he goes, no. He goes, we love the Smokies, so we thought this would be an opportunity to come up here and see the game. He goes, Neyland's all right. He goes, it's cramped, you know, but it was just kind of funny. And I was asking, I said, you know, like, I'm just curious the pulse, man. You know, every time I ever see anybody from another team, I just find some reason to talk to them. And I said, just like, are people mad at, I mean, are they out on Joe? Like, do they want him fired? And he goes, no. I said, he goes, it's hard. He says, when you went from Mullen to what we have now, you know, just 5 years ago, we were, you know, ranked number one in the nation. He said, but he says, I think we've got to give him time, you know, and a lot of people and everybody I talk to from down there, just, they really do like Joe. They think that he could be an answer. It's just they know that they're going to have to be patient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny some people calling him out because I do think they underperformed last year, not doing a great job this year, obviously. But, I mean, it's incredibly difficult when you're right before the season and you got 10 damn suspensions for, what is it, 8 games, what have you.
And oh,
then,
yeah.
And then you got, you know, you're bringing in this transfer quarterback and then he gets banged up. And now you're playing this true freshman, Shane. And a lot of these true freshmen, I mean, they ain't worth a damn, but Garrett Schrader, I mean, he looks like the future Mississippi State football. If nothing else, they got that going for him. Kylan Hill, I know he's coming off a bad game, but he has been outstanding early in the season. I mean, there's a lot to build off here, and it was just inevitable that they were going to take a step back after losing all that NFL talent last year. it's different that it's one thing to be disappointed by what you're seeing, but it's another when the coach is completely out of his league and doesn't know what he's doing. Joe Moore has won several SEC games already. I mean, it's not like he's some damn moron. So I think Mississippi State fans just need to be patient, get more players in there like a Garrett Schrader, let them build around him. Because, again, he's still working with a lot of transfers, a lot of Mullen guys, and that's certainly nothing wrong with those players. I'm not suggesting that, but I still don't think it's quite the team that he wants it to be, at least in his image, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He did tell me, and he said, Ole Miss can go to hell. He did say that. I asked him if he'd been to every stadium. He says, well, there's one that I haven't. And I was like, where's that? And he goes, Ole Miss, because they can go to hell. I'm not giving them a dime is what he said. I love it. I love it.
Well, let's hit on Joe Moore, just his final thought then here, Shane, because he asked on the fans to come on out to Davis Wade Stadium, cheer on Mississippi State. They're going to need him with LSU coming into town.
Coach, LSU always travels really well, and I'm sure they'll have a big contingent here, and you're probably going to need Bob from Boca Chica in the crowd with his cowbell. So what's your pitch to get him and the rest of the Bulldog fans in the stadium Saturday?
Number two team in the country, best stadium in college football, and I'm going to need a true home field advantage. So Bob and the rest of them out there, Andy from Ackerman and Will from West Point and Carl from Columbus, bring them all in. Bring the cowbells, be loud, and come on in and cheer your Bulldogs on.
All right, Shane, I just thought that was an appropriate clip given your little story there, but Mississippi State fans really need to come out and support their team if they have any chance of pulling off the upset. And I said it last week. I wasn't bold enough to call South Carolina winning it, but I said it would be a game. I think this is going to be another good one.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Shane, so let's jump on down to Athens. Kirby Smart met with the media here on Monday. Man, he was asked a lot of questions about that damn decision not to kick it. He was even asked if the kick six played into, you know, that decision, how his team will respond. Georgia fans, you know, I know from a lot of the reaction I've been seeing, they're not quite hitting the panic button, but they're just wondering what in the hell is going on. This was supposed to be another great year for Georgia, the next step. I mean, there's no one in the East that even compares to them when it comes to talent. Yet we're just not really seeing it. That's something Kirby Smart's really got to get going, and it starts with that offense. I mean, they've struggled. They did pretty well against Tennessee. They marched up and down on them on the second half. But Notre Dame and obviously the South Carolina game, offense really struggled. So here's Kirby Smart talking about his team, how they'll respond, and if they need to speed up that offense to get it going. And finally, he's going to be asked about this damn field goal all year, I feel like. But he was asked about it one more time, and if the kick six weighed in on his mind at all.
Kirby, do you have to have a conversation with your team and say, hey, guys, all of our goals are still in front of us? Do you have that conversation with your guys, or do they just know it instinctively?
No, we've had that conversation. I mean, we had that conversation in the locker room. This is not the first time we've had to deal with this each year. We've had to deal with it at different times from different opponents. And they acknowledge that. They understand. Last 20 years or something of the SEC East, I don't think a team that's represented the SEC East has been undefeated. Maybe Florida, I think one year they did. But outside of that, it just doesn't happen very often. So what's more important is that our team gets ready for Kentucky and gets ready to go play than talking about the rest of the year, because we got to worry about Kentucky.
Kirby, it seems the offense, and not just in 2 and 4 minute, does well when it goes up-tempo and plays faster. Do you agree or disagree, and why not do that more?
Yeah, we tried to do that several times Saturday, and when we did that, didn't feel like we were very effective. Number one, they played us differently when we tried to go faster. And if you look at the game, it's an outlook overall. Probably the toughest thing for us is, number one, turnovers. And in the SEC, do a study, 4-0 in turnover margin, you're not going to win, period. I mean, it doesn't happen. So let's start with that. Number two, lack of explosive plays, which – we've struggled with a little bit. We're not getting explosive plays. Even our runs, we're getting runs, good runs, 10 yards or more. But we're not getting explosive runs, which are longer because there's a lot of people in the box. We're not getting explosive passes. We had a few, but not enough. So we did not win 2 minutes. You look at this year, what we've been great at, We didn't win 2 minutes before the half twice, all right, and then we didn't win 2 minutes at the end of the game. So there was 3 2-minutes in that game, which is very unique. We really didn't win any of the three of them, and that's one of our big goals is to win 2 minutes. Every game up until that, it seemed like, we had either won defensively before the half or we had won offensively, and we didn't do that. So those are the three biggest things that we got to improve on, and we'll continue to work on.
Kirby, regarding your decision not to kick a field goal with 8 seconds left, does your experience with that kick six factor in moments like that?
Absolutely not. It has nothing to do with it. It has to do with normal football. No coach in his right mind with 8 seconds thinks he can't get another playoff. We do it every single Thursday, every single Friday. We script it. We've done it with 7 seconds. We've actually done it with 6 ever since the Florida halftime deal where we had a chance to get another play in. You know, Florida, with it being really short, condensed area, because that was like on the goal line. So that's, and plus, we're going to trust our quarterback to make a good decision there and allow us to have a field goal to kick afterwards. So no doubts, no questions, nothing there.
All right, Shane. So, man, these are the type of questions you're going to get when you blow a game at home that you know, no one had you losing. Thoughts on where does Georgia go from here, Shane? And, you know, this is one thing that I thought while doing the show prep, you know, they struggled last week against DeCarrion Joyner. And if Kentucky rolls out Lynn Bowden at quarterback once again, it's kind of a similar type of offense they're going to face. And I would say, you know, nothing against Joyner, but from what we saw against Bowden against Arkansas, this is an even more dangerous player there under center.
Yeah, I think so, but it's very one-dimensional when he's back there. It's not like Bowden was just launching Hail Marys, you know. He was predominantly there to run the ball, and they were able to do it late in the game. I just don't think you can do that against Georgia, especially since they've seen your cards already. So, I kind of feel bad for Kentucky because Georgia got kicked in the teeth, man, and I think that they need to make a statement game, a statement win, to get back on track, and I think this will rally the troops down there that lost to South Carolina was hard on them. But, you know, too, on the other side, that kick was big. I personally thought they should have kicked a field goal. You know, here you've been touting the best kicker, and I see what Kirby was saying, but you know, now it's tough. You can't lose again. You know, there's no two-loss team making the playoffs. So if they go to the SEC championship and they drop one to Bama or LSU or whoever they face, you know what I'm saying? Not saying that they even make it because Missouri is right now at the top. So you just can't afford to make any more mistakes. And I don't know. I honestly, I do think that they rally and boy, they're going to be meeting Kentucky, Big Blue Nation, and I think we're going to see a statement game here, buddy.
Last thing on the Bulldogs real quick, Shane. I don't have a clip here, but I do have these comments from DeAndre Swift asked about Georgia's play calling. He said, I think we need to take more shots downfield. We need to try to get the ball to our playmakers in space. That seems to be a common complaint right now on James Coley's offense, not pushing it down the field. We really started to saw this dink and dunk style against Notre Dame, and it's kind of remained there ever since. Thoughts on Georgia's running back? I don't know if you want to call that calling out the play calling, but the players are saying the same things as the fans. I think you got a problem.
Dude, I'm hearing a lot of people wishing they had Chaney back. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people are not saying that when it happened, but I did see a lot after that game saying, you know, this offensive play calling was just garbage. And, you know, they got young talent at receiver, but you would think by October 15th, we would have done something with the talent that they do have. And it seems like the same old, same old. Even when they played Tennessee, it was like there was no serious threat until they got to the end zone. They just, all right, you know, they're going to throw the cager, you know. It's just like, I don't know. They got a little predictable there, and they just can't do that with every team in the SEC. So I think they mix a few things up this week, like I said. And even the fact that Kirby came out and talked about needing explosive plays makes me think that they're going to try to create something here. So we may see some big-time plays this Saturday.
All right, Shane. Well, let's jump on down to the other side of this game, jump on down to Lexington. Mark Stoops met with the media here on Monday, and he updated the status of Sawyer Smith, and talking about, kind of like you said, needing to get more balance in the offense this week, particularly with facing such a good defense in Georgia. You know, night and day difference between the Arkansas and Georgia defenses here. And then finally, he's expecting Jake Fromm to bounce back in a big way. And this may be kind of going with what you're saying. You know, Georgia kind of got punched in the face, how they respond. Jake Fromm, their leader, he's in the same spot.
What's your feel for Sawyer's availability this week, just at this point?
He's better. You know, getting the update this morning in our staff meeting that he was further along again. Obviously, by not playing, so it was really important for us to get the victory and able to get him some more rest so he can continue to get some strength. And so I think he's much further along. Was, you know, they threw out a percentage this morning, but it was, you know, significantly better facing Georgia on the road.
How do you balance building on the success you had with that game plan Saturday, but knowing it probably has to be a little more diverse or whatever moving forward as people see that on film?
I just think that's what we have to do. You know, always we always look at the good things we're doing and build on those good things, sustain them and build on the good things we're doing, but also try to stay ahead and be creative. We're certainly going to have more balance this week. You know, you just look at Georgia defensively and they give up a very, very short, you know, very few amount of explosive plays and very few explosive runs.
When you watch a quarterback like Jake Fromm play the way he did on Saturday, what's the key for you guys to slow him down and keep him in his tracks?
Yeah, Jake, really a great player. I was about to say one of the kind of college football as far as you don't see that many, you know, that much of that style where he's so accurate and such a good player. And they have such a good pro style attack, you know, with guys unbelievably, you know, strong, big, and well coached offensive line. They always have as deep a running back core as anybody in the country, dynamic guys to throw to. So very, very tough in the pro style. And, So they'll put a lot of pressure on you, and Jake is very, very accurate. I know they didn't play to their standards a week ago, but they'll get that fixed in short order because he's a really good football player.
All right, Shane, so it sounds like Sawyer Smith getting closer to returning. And the secret's out, kind of like you said. That's something I probably should have thought of more before I made those Lynn Bowden comments, but that was just such a surprise that that he was just the center there or the quarterback for Arkansas game. Georgia knows all about it now. They'll be prepared. So it will be kind of fascinating to see how this plays out if they go back to Sawyer Smith or if it's kind of a two-quarterback system here for Kentucky.
Yeah, you just never know with Stoops, man. He's always got something up his sleeve, you know?
Mm-hmm. I know Kentucky was hitting a rough patch there, but yeah, a lot of confidence got gained from that Arkansas win. And we keep waiting for this Georgia team to emerge and show who we thought they were, but we've not really seen it, Shane. Is there any chance that, you know, what happens if, God forbid, Jake Fromm comes out, first possession, throws an interception? Is this Georgia team, I mean, are they shell-shocked? And, I mean, another chance that, imagine South Carolina goes into Athens and wins 1 week, and then Kentucky turns around and does it the following week? I mean, any chance that happens?
Oh, man. There's always a chance, you know. I was willing to say there wasn't a chance South Carolina could have won that game, but they did.
Mm-hmm.
So, honestly, anything could happen. And, we talked about, I joke about Stoops, but I wouldn't surprise me if they came out running triple option, just something they haven't even prepared for. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
I mean, it's not Georgia Tech week yet, you know? So I don't, you know, that's just the kind of coaching he is. And they're going to try to do something to get Kirby off of his game. And I need to see something from Fromm, you know. I mean, we've kind of touted Fromm as one of the best quarterbacks, if not the. There's some people saying Fromm was a better NFL prospect
mm-hmm.
than Tua, you know. And we didn't see it yesterday or Saturday. You know, do we see him bounce back? Do we see him take those mature steps forward and take control of this offense? Because this is this is his team, and everything runs through him. Even though they've got a great line, great running backs, if Fromm ain't getting it done, then this team goes nowhere. So this, I want to see how well he bounces back this week, just personally, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, Shane, that's all the news I got around the league. We do got a bunch of other matchups we're going to get into on the next episode. Still waiting for some pressers and whatnot to get those going. But do you got anything before we hop off here?
No, man. I'm excited, man. We got some great games coming up this weekend. I'm finally flushing Saturday. You know, it took a while, but I've moved on. I'm ready for this week. You know, Coach O's got the 24-hour rule. Apparently I got the 72-hour rule. So I'm ready to go. I'm focused. I'm feeling better. So yeah, I appreciate everybody hanging out with us. We are going to get to the ratings and reviews. I promise. I appreciate everybody taking the time to do that. It really does help us out. If you got yourself an iPhone, just grab there and give us a 5-star rating. And of course, we'll read those reviews sometimes later this week.
Yeah, and don't forget, we still got our little deal going on. If you leave us a rating and review, written review, I will send you a koozie. We got orange, we got blue, we got black, we got red, we got crimson, we got purple, and we got maroon. If you want a That SEC Podcast koozie, reach out to us on Twitter, on Reddit. We also got an email address, thatsecpodcast@gmail.com. Reach out to us on there, and we'll ship you a koozie for giving us a rating and review, because we really do appreciate, and we just want to say thanks for all our listeners out there. We really do appreciate you guys.
Absolutely. Very few orange left, you know? I took them all home.
All right, Shay, that's going to do it for this one. Thanks for joining me. As always, thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right, see you guys. Go Vols.
It's an itch I just can't scratch.